Okay, well, I'm Daryl, compulsive overeater, and those of you that have heard my story on working the steps, I was taught the steps and how to work them through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and so up to this point, that the instructions have been very detailed, but here we come to 6 and 7. And you saw how short the reading was, 2 paragraphs. And so it was real easy for me to, of course, say, yeah, I've got this, and just assume that I had a character defect list. That's the one thing that comes out of the fifth step is the character defect list and the amends list. Those 2 items come out of the inventories that we do. And so I had the character defect list that my sponsor wrote. I didn't, as you know, when I shared on step 5, my sponsor had me burn my inventory that I had written. So she knew I wasn't going to be able to refer back to it. So she took notes as I was sharing it. So she gave me my amends list and gave me my character defect list as she heard them as I was reading my resentments and the fear inventory and the sex inventory. And so when it came to step 6, I had no problem. Yeah, gosh, I it says if we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step 6. Well, answer what? And it's at the under step 5 on the previous page, and it says carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we asked if we've omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall mo walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? And so those are the questions that I'm supposed to ask myself, having done step 5. And then it says, if we can answer to our satisfaction, we look at step 6. So here I was, I had done that, and I certainly was satisfied with my answers on those things. That had been fairly thorough on everything up to that point in time, and so it was real easy for me to do a step 6. And become willing for to have God take them all, and that was and that I was free to get on with it. And step 7 was very much the same way as I listened to that step 7 pr that 7-step prayer, and it says, grant me strength as I go off from here to do your bidding. And it seemed like that was adequate, and I thought I had done step 7, and then I was able to move on with 8 and 9. So in which 8 and 9 were the amend steps, and so those definitely have a lot more detail in working those steps. So fast forward maybe 1.5 years or 2 years, and I'm totally satisfied with the steps, the way I had worked them with my sponsor. And I was at a Saturday morning meeting over in Hacienda Heights, and it was before the meeting started, and I was standing there with a sponsee of mine. And this lady walked up to me that I knew from a lot of meetings, that she went to a lot of the same meetings that I did. And she said, have you read this book? And she handed me a copy of the book Codependent No More. And I just read the back cover, and I just saw stuff I didn't want to see. And I gave it back to her. I said, I don't really want to read that book. And my sponsee went out without my permission, and certainly I didn't direct him to do this, but he went out and he bought 2 copies of that book, one for him and one for me. And I have this theory that once God hands you the book, that it puts it right in your hands. You're supposed to read it. And when I read the book, I saw that there was a whole different level of character defects that had totally evaded me in my first inventory, and that was the codependent aspects and the codependency things, and it was so deeply ingrained in just the way that that I was that I it just kind of slipped past there. But once I read that book and they started pointing them out, the codependencies, I knew that that was obviously something that I was supposed to do something about. And so what happened, and I'm going to go over my character defects in a couple of minutes here, but in so what happened was that I learned that there was an organization, a 12-step organization called Codependence Anonymous. And so I decided to go to a meeting. There was one in Fullerton. And so I looked it up and I went to that meeting. And it was very interesting because the meeting was a step study. And I was the only overeater there. Everybody else in the meeting were recovering alcoholics, and none of them were newbies. They were all double-digit people that had been around 10 years or more, and they had run across a reading by Bill Wilson called Emotional Sobriety, and where Bill Wilson is talking about the next level in recovery. And so they were searching for that emotional sobriety. And so they were doing the step study there, and God just directed me there. That's all I can say. And that I really got to see not only my coda defects of character, but I got to see that there was a whole level of well, almost I would say that the one thing that really impressed me about the coda thing was that the whole program was about defects of character, that it was all about codependency and the defects of character, and that was the whole program, and so that's what we concentrated on. And so as I went through the program, and I obviously went through the steps there, so I got to work the 12 steps on my character defect list, and it turned out to be a life-changing situation for me because I ended up, and that was just one step of the way, but I ended up changing careers eventually going back to school and passing the exams for becoming licensed as a marriage and family therapist. And I served the Lord in that capacity for 20 years before I retired, and just and there's no way in the world that somebody can do that and be codependent at the same time, because you're just going to go down in flames if you do. And so anyway, so it was all part of a bigger plan. That wasn't my plan. But anyways, as I look back, and I have to look back because not long ago, just a matter of months ago, I ran across my original character defect list, and so I jotted them down. Let me grab this here, and it. And so this is from 1988. That the first one was dependence on false securities, financial, people, self, and luck. And so that so the financials, these false securities, and it was really interesting that it was dependence on false securities. And so it's almost like that I was skirting the edges of codependency, that I saw that there were dependencies there, but that they were, but really, I thought that they were Just things like money and people. I didn't have enough money. I didn't have the right people. The people weren't doing things the way I wanted them to. But I had this false sense of security that that was part of me, part of my makeup. And so then the next one was abuse of power, authority, and influence. Now that one's there because we owned a small manufacturing company. We had about 100 employees, and I was the president of the company, so I had a lot of authority in that company. And so a lot of the a lot of the things that turned up in my inventories, inventories that were based in resentment and also in fear, and in the inventories that were not necessarily when we say a sex inventory, we don't mean a sex inventory necessarily. That it was like there's a question in the sex inventory: where was I inconsiderate? Well, I was inconsiderate to a whole bunch of people, and so I had to make that put that on my list of character defects, and the idea that that I was using my authority to and later on I know that I had written down that. That I had manipulated people, and I had used my authority to manipulate people and make them do things the way I wanted them to do things. My third one was vainglory, and that's a term out of the big book. I'd never heard it before, and I loved it. It was dreams of pomp and power. And boy, did I have those dreams! And they're mostly daydreams, by the way. And I would just have these little scenarios that would run through my head where I was just let's just say kicking butt. And it was just it's almost a joke now as I look back at it and say, I wonder how many hours I wasted with this vainglory thing. And then the feelings of guilt. I had feelings of guilt. You know, my sponsor, that I think that it was probably the first time that I shared in depth about what was going on in my life, and I hadn't done it wasn't we're not talking inventory yet, and just telling her, and she told me. She said, well, you know, it becomes clear that you're going to have to learn the difference between feeling guilty and being guilty, because I felt guilty about everything. And that's and it's real interesting, because when I got to the CODA inventory, that turned out to be a there was a little bit different take on that particular character defect. And so I'll get to that inventory in a little bit. But then there was also these feelings of self-loathing, and you hear this a lot in OA, and I certainly had that. And part of it was coming from something that I really didn't know about yet, and which was the impression management part of the CODA thing, where I was trying to look good to these people. And it tells me that that I'm going to do that in the big book, and try and we and that alcoholics live two lives. Remember that part in the big book, and that the one that we want people to see us as, and then the ones that we know ourselves to be, and they're usually not on the same page. That I want you to look and see me in a very, very positive light, and the more I'm successful there and having people look at me in a very positive light, the more phony I feel, because I know I don't deserve it. And Bill Pellant points that out to us in the book, and that so I don't feel that this image of myself that I've presented to people and sold them on, once they accept that as, oh, that's Daryl. Then I really I said, well, I'm the self-loathing comes in because I know I'm a phony, and the higher you think of me, the worse it gets. And there was a one of the big AA guys, Bobby Earle, wrote a book called "I Got Tired of Pretending," and that book helped me a lot. And but that was my life. I was pretending to be the person that everybody, I thought everybody wanted me to be. And let's see. So the self-loathing. Okay, and then this one's a mouthful. Pride, grandiosity, self-righteousness, playing the big shot, thinking I can fix others, and then false pride. That I have that all under one category. And of character defect, and they are related, but the pride and false pride, that false pride thing was the one that really puzzled me. What the hell is false pride? It's mentioned in the big book, and what I finally figured out that false pride, the way that I think Bill meant it, was this idea that I had the feeling that I should be omnipotent. I should be able to get things to go my way. I should be able to do things that I really had no power to do. And that was part of that grandiosity and that that vainglory thing that I was talking about, was that that dream that somehow I should be able to do all of these things that God never gave me the power to do. And so that was the false pride that I was holding. And the weird part is that I was holding myself to that standard that, oh, yeah, well, you fell short because you didn't do this, you didn't do that. Well, once I got in program, I got to see the truth on that is that my sponsor, she had the best analogy for teaching me that. She said, imagine yourself, you're on a log floating down the river, and there's a nail sticking out of the log, and you're an ant. So you're the size of an ant, and you grab hold of that nail and you start turning it, and you have this idea that you're steering the log down the river. She said, everything's going fine because the river's going straight. But once you start hitting some rapids and you start getting some turns, you're going to find out that no matter how hard you turn the nail, that log is going where the river takes it. And there's not a darn thing you can do about it. And that was the lesson that I had to learn, the ant on the log. And I've taught that to so many guys that I've sponsored over the years because it was really important for me to understand that. The judgmental of others and hooked onto that is blame. That I come from a family system where blame is a big deal, that things don't just happen. Somebody's got to get blamed for it, and they've got to get roasted for it. And so I spent a lot of my younger years is finding ways to dodge that. I have in the next character defect, I have self-justification, excuses, and alibis. And so that was me. That I would make up alibis before I got caught doing anything, just in case I got caught doing something. And so it was a crazy way to live. But that's the way I came into this program, was with all of these this bag full of character defects that I'm dragging around through life. And so so this idea of being judgmental of other people, I had gotten really good at that, and it's something I had to unlearn. And the one time I remember that I was afraid that I was going to go into relapse, that the one thing that tipped me off was that I was sitting at meetings and I was feeling judgmental, that I was listening to people share, and this is before I had a sponsor, and I realized, hey, that's a big slip backwards, because I wanted, when I first came in, I was open to anything, and if you had a good idea that sounded like it would work for me, I'd try it. And so I was very open to taking direction, but then I found myself starting to be judgmental of people sharing, and I realized that, hey, this is not going in the same direction that I had been going in before. And I then I had somebody I think that Georgia remembers it was Gail, and Gail was in relapse and had been abstinent for a long period of time, and it was struggling. When I first came in, she was already had lost her abstinence, and she was struggling to get it back. And she would tell us about the struggle of getting her abstinence back. But she's in the first probably 6 months that I was in program, she did not get it back, and she finally did. But she came up to me after one of the meetings where I was feeling judgmental, and don't, I have no idea what she saw, but I knew she knew what she was talking about. She said, "Daryl, I think that you're in danger of relapse." That's what she told me. And I could just feel the blood drain out of my head when she told me that, because I knew she would what she that she knew what she was talking about when it came to relapse. And it scared the heck out of me, to be honest with you, because I did not want to relapse. And I went home and I prayed that night, and I went to bed. I woke up the next morning, my prayers had been answered. I knew exactly what I had to do. That I had to work all 12 steps, and I had to get a sponsor, and so that and I did that almost immediately. I got a sponsor almost immediately, and she got me going on the 12 steps, and really working them, not just the ones I wanted to, but the ones all of the 12 steps. And I could I could see myself turning my will and my life over to my higher power, and I could see myself admitting to myself being powerless, and I couldn't see myself writing an inventory. I could not see myself reading it to somebody else. It was just that I was going to work the program my way. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work that way. And so anyway, that was so self is justification, excuses, alibis were ways for me to handle the blame that I just knew was coming around the corner. And that was kind of what my life looked at looked like. Fear, lack of faith, trust in God. That the fear and lack of faith or trust in God, that those were character defects that I had for sure. The fear that I had in my life, that all the things that were going to go wrong, the financial things, are from my work side of my life, and some financial stuff in my personal side of life too, and then other problems. That I had, I did not have the faith that God was going to come in and take care of them. I had to come to program and be taught that God owns all the money, owns all the houses, owns all the properties, owns all the businesses, owns all the banks, and all I have to do is trust Him, and I'm going to be okay. And but that was not intuitive to me, believe me, from where I came from. Feelings of inferiority or inadequacy. Those were a big one for me, and I wouldn't be surprised if that would not be almost universally true of anybody that suffers from this disease as a kid, because you're told many times how inadequate you are. And I know that I practice so hard to to be a decent baseball player. I would practice by the hour, just so that I wouldn't be picked last. And sometimes it worked, and sometimes it didn't. Sometimes I still got picked last, and it was a tough way to go for a fat little kid, is to try to compete on the baseball field and the football field too. So. And other areas of that came from my original defective character list was grudges. I had these grudges, and then she had written next to that feelings of revenge, that if I had a grudge, I was going to get even. And I would and I was a master of passive aggressive behavior. And that would be my best tool for getting even. I'm not going to walk up to somebody, fat guy. I'm not going to walk up and punch somebody in the nose, but I could do the passive aggressive thing, and have a little bit of feeling of revenge coming out of that. Another character defect on my list was self-pity, and I was loaded with that, and I really felt that in so many ways that I was a victim of my life, that I didn't choose this. I didn't want to be running the company. It's too much responsibility. I wanted something a little bit easier, and it wasn't. And so there was a lot of self-pity that I would get into. And I think self-pity and depression kind of go hand in hand. And I learned later from my therapist that I had been he what he said was I had been depressed all my life, and that maybe a low-level depression, maybe it wasn't manic depression or something like that, but it was depression. And so self-pity and depression, they kind of go hand in hand. And so I'm sure that played a part in it. For me, the self-pity did. Manipulation of others, I had mentioned that earlier, especially because of my position in the company. Evading responsibility, bluffing, cheating, and lying. That who ate that? Not me. And that's where it came to food. But it would be in the business field. I would think nothing about bluffing or cheating, that with the competitors and the competitive nature of the business I was in, that it was almost like being in a poker game, and there was a lot of bluffing and cheating and lying that went on, and not just for me, but my competitors as well. And so they were real happy when I got in recovery and I couldn't do it anymore, and they could still do it. So I never liked that part. That once I got abstinent in OA, it was almost like that. It was a handy. I had a handicap going when it came to being in a competitive field of business. Having selfish, unreasonable demands, and boy, did I that I had a lot of that. It took a while for me to realize that these were not just unreasonable demands, but they were selfish, unreasonable demands, that I only looked at things from my point of view. Never did I look at it from your point of view. That was just my point of view, and I had demands based on that, and they were definitely selfish. And so that was one of my character defects. And another one that was a big one in my family was worry. For me, I've thought I once I got into program and I started reflecting back at my earlier childhood, and it's almost like my mom express love by worrying about you. That, 'cause she would say that a lot. She said, "Oh, I'm worried about so and so. I'm worried about Jimmy. I'm worried about you." And she couldn't say, "I love you," but she could say, "I'm worried about you." And so that was almost like that was a subculture in our family, was that if you're worried about somebody, you must really care about them. And so I was eaten up with worry, and that was one of the things that program really helped me with, was having a higher power that I could trust, that I knew was not going to abandon me and drop me, and that I didn't have to worry about all these things. Then the lack of self-discipline and procrastination, those two things were real big, and I still battle the procrastination thing. The only difference is that I can kind of pull the plug on it. I see myself as being procrastinating over something, and I handle two things that I wanted to procrastinate over today, but there's one that I still am procrastinating over. I've got to make that call tomorrow, but that's one of those things where it gets for me, it gets better. But it hasn't been removed for sure. Stubbornness and lack of honesty, that was another character defect. And that lack of honesty, openness, and willingness, you know, the how of the program, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, that stubbornness was the roadblock that kept me from really accessing that part of the program at first. Eventually I was able to do that. And then trying to impress others, that's image building and looking good to other people. I had mentioned that earlier, but that was a big part of my character defect list. That was really important to me, is how others saw me. And then overreacting to others and events, and having a desire to control. And so those were the character defects that I was willing to let go of, to whatever extent that I had to, but I wasn't following any active program of working on them. I just felt that they were getting better, and they were. When I first uncovered this list, I kind of did a mental check of where I was with them, and most of them was I was way less. I'm not I have a tough time owning that some of them are entirely gone, but I think they're way less, and I think that there's a part of the program is because we're constantly called upon to look at things with this rigorous honesty, and that it almost helps us to observe or to build this this ability to observe ourselves in a situation from a distance, as though we're looking at ourselves in a play, instead of actually just reacting to everything that's going on around me. I can kind of look and see, well, what is my motive? You know, what am I after here? Why, you know, applying the 10th step, let's just say, that spot check inventory that we learn about in the 12 and 12, is that that a lot of times that's what I need to do, is I need to be able to see myself and what is my motive and why am I doing this, and being able to maybe make an adjustment mid-course in some of these things. So then I just want to take a look at some of the CODA things that popped up that I just touched upon in the regular inventory. I didn't realize how deep they went, but assuming responsibility for others' feelings and behaviors, and that was known as an overdeveloped sense of responsibility. And so I had seen a little bit of that in my original one, but not to the extent that it really existed in me. Difficulty in identifying feelings. I had a lot of times that I would have feelings that I was learning slowly but surely how to identify what the feelings were by coming to meetings and listening mostly to the women in the program, because it seemed like the women in the program had a better handle on what on their feeling life. Okay, 5 minutes. Okay. On their feeling life than I did. And but I could learn from them by just paying attention to what you guys were describing to me. Difficulty in identifying feelings, and then difficulty in expressing feelings. That was something that I needed to come to a place of being able to be, I'm not going to say more aggressive, more assertive, because being more aggressive would be more like the old Daryl, who was trying to manipulate people in his business life. And so this was different. This was being able to express feelings, and I had to guard against people pleasing, because that was one of the terms that I learned in CODA that I recognized immediately. Once I heard that term, I recognized it immediately. Nowadays you hear it all the time, but in those days you didn't hear it all that often, and I was definitely guilty of that. And fear and worry on how others may respond, so that I wouldn't be too blunt, and that I might hurt their feelings or this or that. I'll tell you, the thing that helped me get over that was sponsorship. If we're going to be honest with the people that we sponsor, is that sometimes we have to tell them things they don't want to hear. And trying to do that in a compassionate way is something that this program, I'm not going to say teaches us, but demands of us as sponsors. Fear and approval seeking. That was another one that was the CODA thing that I had a bottom line that, yeah, I'd do all of these nice things for you, but I had an agenda. I was looking for your approval of me. So you were going to pat me on the head and tell me what a good boy I was. Being afraid of being hurt or rejected. That was a big one. So anyway, and just going down the list, and I often put other people's needs first ahead of mine, and there's a whole list of these things, and some of them that you may identify with, and some of them are not yours at all. And the character defect list is one of a personal one. That it's that my list is probably has a lot of things that are common with a lot of people on there, but it probably has some things on it that most people don't have, and I would say especially the stuff that came down through my family, that the worry thing, for example. I don't know if many people equate worry and love, but they certainly did in my family. And anyway, so those were the character defect list. So I got to work two separate times on the character defect list, but it was basically the second one, the CODA one, was the one that I really needed to get a handle on if I was going to move ahead in my career, my new career. And so that turned out to really be an important one, not only for myself, but also being able to recognize it in my clients. and being able to point it out to them that these are things that they had to work on and items that they needed to address. And that isn't that that's just so much of what the program is about, that as we work through our own stuff, that we become put ourselves in a position of being helpful to somebody else. And how important that is. I remember that when I first finished my fifth step with my sponsor, she said, "Now you can start sponsoring." I said, "No, I'm not ready to sponsor. That scared me." And she said, "That's not up to you. Your job, now that you've finished your fourth and fifth step, your job is to identify as a sponsor, and God will determine when you're ready by sending you somebody to sponsor." And that's the way it was. I identified for a while before anybody came my way. They probably figured, who wants to get sponsored by that guy? And but anyway, it's a but that was her approach, is a trust God approach, that he will make the decision for me when I'm ready to sponsor, as long as I identify. That's my footwork, is to identify. And I think so that it turns out that six and seven have a lot to do with working with others, and it's through our own shortcomings that we prepare ourselves to be able to be of use to somebody else along the way, and God engineers all that, that we only have to show up one day at a time and handle these things as best we can, and God will take care of the rest. That's it. Thank you.